Does this sound like you? You're an agreeable colleague, a self-sacrificing family member, a yes person. Well, being generous and helpful is one thing, but not being able to say no and craving the praise of others can be a slippery slope. If people-pleasing has been an issue for you in your life, how have you managed that? And what's been the impact for you? Has it got you into some situations that you wish you could have backed out of? Let me know if you found a way to say no with kindness. With me today is Rachel Sampson. She's a clinical psychologist based in Adelaide. Rachel, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good morning, Hilary.
Now, how do we define people-pleasing first, going above and beyond a kind of healthy approach to helping other people out?
Yeah, so people-pleasing is really a long-term or lifelong pattern of putting other people's wants and needs ahead of our own in our daily life. And as you mentioned earlier, this pattern can also be referred to as self-sacrificing. So if we are a people-pleaser, we're typically sacrificing our own wants and needs in our relationships.
And how does that show up? How can we tell that we're sacrificing our own needs? Do we get that little kind of bubbling feeling of resentment?
Yes, yeah, some people do and some people don't. For some people, it takes a while to kind of unpack the people-pleasing pattern and get in touch with some of those feelings of resentment or maybe having their needs unfulfilled. But for some people, the resentment is very strong, and that's one of the clues that we might be self-sacrificing. But there's also other clues like feeling exhausted, feeling our relationships are out of balance, feeling burnt out, and just feeling unhappy in lots of areas of our life.
So when you say out of balance, do you mean there's a kind of reciprocity imbalance?
Absolutely, yeah. So typically, for someone who's people-pleasing or self-sacrificing, there is a lack of reciprocity in the relationships and they tend to be more one way, so that the people-pleaser is excessively focusing on the other person's wants and needs at the expense of their own. And so over time, that can build up to that person feeling like, well, when is it my turn to get my needs met? You know, I'm doing all of this caring and giving, but I'm not seeing a lot of that coming back.
So where does that come from, Rachel? Like, how does it grow up within a person that they become that?
That's a great question. So there are a few different factors. Some of them are what we would call more nurture and some of them are more nature. So one of the major factors is our childhood or family environment when we were growing up. So a child may have learnt very early that they needed to keep their parent happy in order to stay safe or maintain a connection with their parent. Perhaps they had a really critical parent and they needed to please them in order to keep that parent happy. When people grew up with a parent who was, say, abusive or rejecting or frightening when they were stressed or angry, as a child, they probably learnt to do what they could to keep that parent happy or calm in an attempt to really prevent them from becoming abusive or rejecting them. And so in that way, it's a kind of survival response where the child's focus becomes the parent rather than themselves. And a child in that situation will usually become hypervigilant, looking out for the subtle cues that the parent's mood is changing. And as those children move into adulthood, they might continue to be hypervigilant to other people's feelings and needs and kind of generalise what they learnt in childhood. So they actually continue to please others in order to protect themselves from re-experiencing what they went through in childhood, even if they're actually very safe in their adult relationships. And we also... We also see it in children, when people grew up in homes where there was also a parent with a mental illness or addiction. So perhaps the parent withdrew when they were depressed and the child felt it was their responsibility to care for the parent and try to make them happy in order to increase their chance that that parent would not withdraw, and so that they would stay connected to the child. So that would be another childhood scenario where people-pleasing is likely to develop.
So Rachel Sampson, do we need to differentiate then when we're looking at how that plays out in people's lives between that being a character trait that you have and maybe you take on too many projects at work or something,
yeah,
and really quite toxic situations where you are in fact trying to stay safe at home or keep you and your kids safe by placating a dangerous partner?
Yeah, absolutely. So there would be situations where people are actually in threatening situations in their adult life. And they are engaging in these strategies to, as you say, keep themselves or their family safe. But that would be, I guess, less of a people-pleasing trait or pattern, and that would be more, as you say, about actually genuinely needing to stay safe in a situation. So you're right, we do need to differentiate between those two different scenarios. When we talk about people-pleasing as we are today, it's actually people acting as if their childhood was still true, when in actual fact they don't need to continue to people-please in adulthood. So they might be in safe romantic relationships, be in, you know, workplaces with a reasonable boss and have, you know, fairly decent friends, but they're still operating from that old childhood blueprint where they feel like I need to keep everyone safe or something bad might happen, when it actually won't.
Is there a gender aspect here? I mean, we know that most of the harm that comes from family violence affects women, so that's an element. But in more generally, when you look at it as a character trait, is it something that women do more than men, or no?
Absolutely, yes. So I think gender role socialisation is certainly a big factor and contributes to more women people-pleasing than men. So I think narrow gender stereotypes tell us, at least traditionally, that women should be passive, not aggressive, agreeable, self-sacrificing, and take on roles as the caretakers in the family and community. So traditionally, certainly girls and women have been socialised to be people-pleasers.
We're speaking with Rachel Sampson, who's a clinical psychologist based in Adelaide, and a text message from Jane. Jane says, thanks for this topic, people-pleasing. Can you discuss the workplace situation where a staff member, not usually a manager, buys and encourages food and refreshments to other staff, whether we want it or not, and in particular to those who have a weight problem? How do we stop them but with care and compassion? And I think, Rachel, that goes to the next step in our discussion. How do you say no with kindness?
So I think it's all about balancing our own needs and wants with those of others. And I think when we have balance, we are able to acknowledge the other person's intentions, their wants and needs, and have empathy for that. But we still need to assess whether what the other person wants is in our best interest as well. So if we were being unskillful, we might just reject the other person's request and hurt their feelings. And, you know, that might not be the best option for anyone. But if we can do this skillfully, we can say, okay, I can see what you're trying to do. I get what you want. Unfortunately, in this situation, it's not going to work for me. And so I'm going to have to decline.
And that moment where someone asks you to do something and you're faced with the choice of what to say to them can be quite stressful, can't it? You can feel your heart rate go up. You can feel
absolutely
a bit locked in. What are some strategies to give yourself a moment to make the right choice of what to say?
Yeah, well, I think you've answered that. Your own question is giving yourself a moment. That is so key. And I think before we can do that, though, we need to probably be aware that this people-pleasing is a tendency that we have, or maybe it's that we struggle to say no. Once we're aware of that, we can start to change the pattern. And one of the things that we would recommend to people in a therapy setting is learning to really pause and slow down the interaction with another person, because we're much more likely to say yes if we're feeling pressured or if we don't give ourselves that moment to pause and think about, okay, have I slipped into a people-pleasing mode here? Let me just take a moment. And you can even say to the person, oh, you know, thank you for, you know, bringing this up with me, or, okay, I've acknowledged that you've asked me, you know, to do X, Y, and Z. Just give me a few moments and I'll get back to you. So you can do that explicitly, or you can just do it internally. But just giving yourself that moment can allow you to connect with what it is that is actually the best option for you in that moment. And it might be to say no.
Does it help to role play things? I saw an article recently that said 19 ways to say no. 19? Do we need 19?
I would like to read that article. yes, I think role playing is fantastic. So in therapy, we will do a lot of role playing. And so what we would typically do is, as the therapist, I would actually play my client in their life situation. So I would model saying no in the situation, and then we would swap. And then I would have the client practice saying no. And that is incredibly effective, because often if you have been a people pleaser your whole life, you might not even have the language to, you know, set a boundary or to politely say no. So building up that skill set and having even sort of scripts in your mind, I don't know that I have 19, but some scripts, is really useful, because then it's in your, you know, your mind, and you can kind of pull that out when you need it. So I think role-playing is fantastic.
Well, and if you have been a people pleaser all your life, as you say, you might well get pushback if you start trying to change. How do you deal with that sensitively and kindly? Because your family's going to go, who are you now?
Exactly. So this is the biggest challenge, I think, because for a people pleaser, you know, often you don't want to hurt people's feelings, or even you're actually fearful of, you know, the consequences if, you know, you had one of the childhoods that we spoke about earlier. You are going to probably get some pushback. And so that's going to be really hard. So the best thing is to anticipate that people will resist the change, and to stick to, you know, your commitment to change this pattern anyway. And even if you have some hiccups, or you kind of start with saying no but end up going back on it and saying okay, and if you have a few false starts, that's fine. Be really patient with yourself, but do expect that there will be pushback. And you can even say to people, if it's in close relationships, you can say, I've recognised that I have this pattern in my life where I often do say yes when I want to say no, or I focus more on other people. I really want to change this. Can you support me with that? And people either will or they won't, depending on how much they benefit from you being a people pleaser. But I still think it's important to really just be patient, be kind to yourself, but still stick with trying to change the pattern.
Yes, indeed. And it's teaching your kids very healthy boundary setting as well. Rachel Sampson, what a fascinating topic. I reckon a lot of people are nodding their heads at home. Thanks so much for joining us today to talk about it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Hilary.
Rachel Sampson, a clinical psychologist based in Adelaide.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.